Welcome to one of Kathy Frey's Motherwise podcasts. Kathy is a best-selling maternity author and award-winning international maternity consultant. During her time as a midwife, she's caught hundreds of babies. So you're in good hands. Enjoy.
Hi, everybody. Kathy Frey here from Motherwise, and welcome to another deep dive into a topic today. And the topic today is all about when you are day 10 or 12 to 14, particularly day 12, 14, but 10 to 12 to 14, after you've had a baby. And what should you be aware of at this stage? What should you be knowledgeable about? Okay, so firstly, we're going to talk about baby, then we're going to talk about you. So firstly, a baby should be back at their birth weight by around day 10 to 12 and day 14 on the outside. Look, some babies are back at their birth weight within a few days, and that's fine. But with a fully term baby, day 14 is regarded as the sort of maximum it takes to return to that birth weight. If they're a premature baby, we do allow them up to 3 weeks and still sort of count that as normal. But you should be certainly seeing weight gain that can confirm that your baby's doing really well. And if you're ever not sure about why, you know, is baby getting good transfer of milk with your feeds, you know, it's not like you can measure your breast milk out in a container straight from your boob into your baby's belly, you know. And so often mums get really worried and they're like, oh, I don't know, you know, is he getting enough? Is she getting enough? Boy, the millions of times I've been asked that question. And the easiest way to tell is the fact that the baby's doing wet nappies. And so long as your baby is making 8 or 10 or 12 wet nappies every 24 hours, don't stress about it, the milk transfer. There's no way they can make all those wet nappies unless they're getting great supplies of breast milk. So you don't have to sweat it at all. Now, some places you will read that 6 wet nappies a day is absolutely fine. And I would have to say that I don't completely agree with that. I think that babies that are only making 6 wet nappies a day are just staying within just the thriving levels. They're not officially failing to thrive, but boy, they're only just hanging in there, to be honest. And when I find a baby that's only having 6 or 7 wet nappies a day, especially if it's only having 5, I would always be saying to the mum, you know, I think you should, every time you feed baby, express some off and top them up with some expressed breast milk. And let's get some more weight onto them, because the bigger and stronger they are, the more efficient they will become as a feeder. So the more weight we can put on them, the better they're going to feed. So let them have their breast milk, and then look, even if all you're giving them is an extra 5 or 10 or 20 mils after a feed, it's all extra that they wouldn't have been getting. So I would say that when you know your baby's making 8 or 10 wet nappies every 24 hours, now you know the baby's getting enough food. And if they're making 12 wet nappies, diapers every 24 hours, oh my God, they will be putting on fantastic weight gain. So don't stress about the weight gain if you are seeing loads of wet nappies. But if you are really wanting to double check, well, what you can do is use digital electronic scales, normal adult weight scales, and stand on the scales holding your baby. And that's your combined weight. And then feed your baby and stand on the scales again holding your baby. And that's your combined weight. And the difference is how much they've drunk. Because pretty much breast milk is about, you know, similar weight to water. That if you've got a 300 gram weight gain, then that equals 300 mils that they've drunk. So, you know, or 200 gram weight gain equals 200 mils of milk. Or convert it into ounces. So 7 ounce weight gain equals about 7 ounces of milk, which is, you know, a good feed. So there we go. That's the magic formula. Now, the thing is, which parents often find so weird and strange, is that so long as that baby is making 10 to 12 wet nappies every 24 hours, it does not matter how frequently or infrequently they poo. We are talking about 100% exclusively breast milk fed babies. If they are fed formula, well, formula is processed and digested in a different way because it's not human milk, it's cow's milk adapted to human milk. So there is basically that we aren't able to process the milk molecules quite in the same way. But with human milk going into human babies, we process it incredibly efficiently. And so it means that the baby only needs to go have a poo once a week. But some babies poo lots of times every day, but it really doesn't matter. So anything from 7 times a day to once every 7 days is absolutely normal, so long as they're making loads of wet nappies. All right, so if your baby at this stage is really only putting on, about 100 grams a week, like 3.5 ounces a week, jeepers, that's not a lot. I would definitely be topping them up. And every so often you get babies who are putting on about 400 grams a week, or like 14 ounces a week. Oh my God, they have such an enormous appetite. Phenomenal, amazing. And no worries there. God, they're probably making about 14 wet nappies a day, those babies. Or 7 really heavy ones, like, whoa, man, that diaper's heavy. Yeah, typically boys, to be honest, they can be amazingly efficient feeders. Once they get the hang of it, right at the beginning, boys can be quite lazy feeders and girls can be more efficient when they, just a few days old. But quite often by 2 or 3 weeks, those boys have become milk drinking machines, and quite amazing. Interestingly, we do expect boys to put on more weight in that first month than we do the average girl. So already the difference in the sexes is showing at that age that they have slightly larger bodies in general. Okay, so that's sort of basically baby. Nothing much else to worry about there. Okay, but mother, well, you've just had the most intensive 2-week period, perhaps, of your entire life. And finally, you might have a chance to pay yourself some attention and, what are the things that you need to be thinking about and have a chance to put your head above the sand and, catch up on yourself. So, firstly, your blood pressure should be normotensive by now. Normal, back to normal level, whatever normal was for you, whatever your first blood pressure was when you started this pregnancy, you should be pretty much at that now. So hopefully somebody's done your blood pressure in the last couple of weeks and we know that you're all good. And in fact, if you had any problems, you would be likely showing symptoms of those anyway. All right, so by this stage, a midwife should not be able to feel your fundus. Well, that sounds interesting if you haven't used that word before, but by now you should be experts at it. So your fundus is the top of your womb, and they shouldn't be able to palpate that within your abdomen now. It should be well and truly contracted back to almost the size of an orange and all tucked behind your pelvic bones and not reachable by an abdominal palpation. Your lochia, which is your vaginal discharge, should be alba by now, which is that white yellowish kind of phase that it goes into for the next sort of 2 or 3 weeks, where you should just really be needing a thin panty liner, and that's about it. Maybe the occasional little bit of brown going there, but not fresh red. That would be very unusual at this stage. Your sutures, depending on what your obstetrician or midwife, well, with midwives, when it comes to perineal suturing, we nearly always use self-dissolvable sutures, so there's no need to remove any sutures. But with C-section wounds, obstetricians have lots of different things that they might use there. Sometimes they're self-dissolving, sometimes they're removable sutures, sometimes they're partially removal, where you kind of have a bead in a bead and you pull a thread through. I mean, there's all different things. Oh, staples. Sometimes staples need to be removed. But that should have already been done a few days ago, usually around day sort of 7 to 10. And that wound, or be it your perineum or your lower abdomen, any suturing wound should be looking pretty good by now, to be honest. And be just, every day feeling more comfortable. And if there's any signs that it's getting red and angry, that's not all right. And My best advice to you is to be using Hypercal lotion on that, which is a combination of Hypericum and Calendula. Hypericum is a natural antiseptic and pain reliever, and Calendula is a natural skin healer. When you put it on, it does sting still a little bit initially, but it's actually like a really good sting. It's kind of like, oh, it's a sting, and then it feels way better. But if there's any signs that that wound is getting angrier and angrier, it's like every day it's getting more red and more uncomfortable, that's so not all right. You definitely should be seeing a health professional with that and piling on the Hypercal. If your health professional is from the medical profession rather from than from a naturopathic profession, they won't even know what Hypercal is, and they'll probably say, oh, I don't think you should be using that, because they just simply don't know what it is. But certainly any naturopath will tell you that it's amazing stuff. And I can tell you honestly that in my entire practice, I have never had a wound infection postnatally, which is phenomenal, because all my private clients use Hypercal. All right, now what else? Your nipples. Hopefully that any trauma that they may have gone through with breastfeeding will be really starting to ease off by now. You won't be perhaps 100% there, but you know, they should be getting a little bit better, not getting worse. And people sort of say, oh, if the latch is correct, it should be completely comfortable. Yeah, no. I don't agree with that. It does depend on the baby's ferociousness of their suckle, combining with the sort of length of that woman's nipples. You can have a beautiful latch and still have a bit of nipple trauma, but certainly it's really not, or let's say not trauma, because trauma is really more because it's actually been latching poorly. But I guess just soreness that, you know, and if you sucked on any part of your anatomy, I say to women, look, if I sucked on your little finger for 8 hours a day, or I sucked on your little toe for 8 hours a day, even with a beautiful suckle latch, it'd still be a little bit sore. So, you know, that's not unreasonable, but it should be getting better. You know, you should be feeling like every day you're getting more confident with your breastfeeding competence. The baby is getting better and better at latching correctly from the get-go. You are not having to pull baby off and reattach them so often, because baby's actually getting it right. They're getting memory. And, you know, it's so important that you do pull them off and get them reattached correctly. And it's because you're creating like a blueprint in their mind. If this is what's happening. So if you imagine that every time you latch them correctly, you're teaching them this. Latch correct, and they might go and incorrect, and you go, no, 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 back to here, do it correct, and they go, oh, I'll just try and do a latch like that. No, bring you back, always the same way. I'll try that way. No, bring you back. So that's what you're doing, all right? You need to bring them back all the time to the correct latch. And then you're establishing that blueprint in their mind. And look, by the time they're 3 weeks old, honestly, darling, usually the latch problem is all solved. And they really are pretty much starting to latch correctly every time. And by the time they're 4, 5, 6 weeks old, well, that's when you can be one of those women, like you've seen them, who sits in a coffee shop and lifts up their top discreetly and puts their baby on without even having to adjust them. So when you first have a baby, you know, it's all like this, and 6 weeks down the track, they just go on. And so that's what they've done, is they've established this correct pattern on how to latch, right? Okay, so next thing, how's your mother-baby interaction going? Yeah? So often people just assume that bonding is this instant super glue that just appears straight away as soon as that baby's born. And you know what? Sometimes it is. And sometimes for a woman, it can be with one baby and not with another, and that freaks her out. But basically for most women, I mean most, you know, 4 out of 5, for most women, the bonding process just evolves like a flower opening its petals over the first month. It's just a gentle thing. And then by the time you've got a 2-month-old, you just realize that you can't imagine your life without them anymore. It's hard to go back and think about the time when they weren't there, or it's so fulfilling. It's so filled you. You can't imagine taking that piece away because you have an empty gap now. And so when you get to that point, you're well and truly bonded. But in that first month, you know, there can still be sometimes some moments when you think, oh, face palm. Oh, what did I do? Why did I think I wanted to become a mother? This baby has completely and utterly turned our lives upside down. And that's because, well, those feelings are quite reasonable and logical and rational because your baby has turned your life upside down irreversibly. But I want you to know that if you are feeling a little bit more bonded every day, well, that's great, you know, and that's normal. But you shouldn't be feeling necessarily 100% from the get-go, you know, but probably by the time you get to 2 weeks, you're sort of over the halfway percent. You sort of feel like you're more than 50% bonded, two-thirds bonded, something like that is a kind of normal feeling. But also amongst that conversation, we have to bring up the topic of postnatal depression and what your risk factors are for it. Remember, 50% of women who get postnatal depression don't have risk factors for it. So, you know, there's so many risk factors for it, really. And one of the biggest risk factors is the fact that you're a mother who's had a baby. Well, there's a risk factor for postnatal depression. It is. So let's just throw some other risk factors in there. So everybody has risk factors. It's just some have more than others. If you've had any depressive disorders in your medical history personally or within your family medical history. So if that's happened, well, yeah, statistically, you're a little bit more at risk. If you were an older mother, so I have to say my 42-year-olds are more prone to it than my 22-year-old. It's first-time mothers. I think because at 42, you have very high expectations as to what you think it should all be like, whereas 22-year-olds are pretty a lot more crazier and they have less anal expectations and they kind of more go with the flow. If you did not have a good 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks off work before having your baby, if you were one of these women who kind of, you know, worked up till the Friday and the waters broke on the Saturday and on the Sunday you had the baby, you've got a higher risk. Or even worse, if you actually had your baby before you stopped work because you didn't manage to have time to get through that million list of all these to-dos that you wanted to do because you thought it was absolutely fine to work up till 37 weeks and your baby was born at 37 and a half weeks. Which is absolutely normal and not early, because early babies are born before 37 weeks and term babies are born between 37 and 42 weeks. Okay, or, you know, maybe the birth was really traumatic and maybe you feel like you didn't fully engage in the process beforehand as to really getting well educated on labor and birth. And maybe you're feeling like you kind of gave some of the power away and other people sort of took control of your labor and birth and, you know, just said, okay, let's break the waters, let's start an oxytocin drip, let's put the CTG monitor on, oh look, let's get her into forceps and yank that baby out. Like, and you're sort of like, what happened? How did this happen? I was going to have my water birth. So sometimes if you're in that space, it will definitely put you at higher risk for postnatal depression. So I want you to basically know that you are at risk anyway because you've had a baby and because you will be sleep deprived. If your breastfeeding's not going 100% exclusively successfully, that puts you at higher risk of getting postnatal depression. So know you're at risk. Be kind to yourself. Be gentle on yourself. And don't be annoyed if you feel like that's creeping in. And if it is, one of the best things I can say, look, check this out with your own local naturopath. But I think that something like Siberian ginseng is a really good thing to be taking at this time, which is a bit of a central nervous system tonic. If your other half, by the way, if your partner is getting really stressed, sometimes I see situations where actually the mum is coping really well, but the new dad is just so worried all the time. He's worried about baby and he's worried about this and he's worried about that and he's really fretting and it's really stressing him out, actually. And he didn't expect that to be, he didn't expect to be so worried about everything. There's something called 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytrophin, and that is a great little supplement for the men, actually. It's like a precursor metabolite for serotonin, but it's natural. So that's very good. Okay, what else? Now, you should be starting to feel like you're able to predict a little bit more about what baby's cries are meaning. And you should have this. Make sure you've got it. Why they cry. That's my why they cry sheet. If you don't have that or can't work out why you don't have that, drop us an email, Kathy@KathyFrey.com, and we'll make sure we get that to you. So that is like a summary of the chapter from Oh Baby, talking about, it's like a little reference. So you should know all your different cries, particularly hungry cry, tired cry, overtired cry. And what else? I'm just looking at my list here. It is also time that you should be starting your pelvic floor exercises. So if you haven't started them yet, yes, you should be. And the last thing I'm going to do here is I want to tell you about how to do pelvic floors, because there's so many different ways that people tell you how to do them. Okay, but I'm going to explain it my way because I think it's an easy way to understand. So your pelvic floor exercises are nothing whatsoever to do with your butt muscles or your thigh muscles or your tummy muscles, right? So you and I, we're going to do one together right now. Okay, so what I want you to do is I want you to tightly squeeze your vagina like you are lifting it up, like lifting it up a floor. Okay, so do that together. So remember, it's nothing to, like you're holding in a wee. Okay, now you're holding on to that and you're holding in that wee. Now I want you to lift it up a floor, a bit higher, up another floor, down a floor, up a floor, down a floor, let go. That's your pelvic floor muscles. Nothing to do with your tummy muscles, your butt muscles, or your thigh muscles. Lifting up, 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 down, down, up, up, down, down, down. So you can do things like sort of get into your own rhythm, but you might do 10 long holds and then several short quick holds, but you should be doing your pelvic floor exercises at least once a day, okay? Couple of minutes once a day at least, all right? Good 10 minutes. Actually, look, the recommendation is 10 minutes every day. What all us women should be doing, if you do 10 minutes every day of pelvic floor exercises from now to when you hit menopause, they say you'll never have an incontinence issues at all. And you're already wearing pads at the moment, so imagine having to wear those all the time. So make sure you do your pelvic floor exercises. And the only other thing I'll just mention as well, shaking baby syndrome, all right, SBS, that sort of goes in with that whole postnatal depression. But you should be absolutely certain that you, as a caregiver to your baby, and nobody else caregiving your baby would ever potentially have a angry personality where they snap and they shake their baby, okay? Never ever leave somebody alone, your baby alone with somebody who's got anger management issues. All right, so that's everything for today, and I wish you all a lovely rest of your week. See you later. Bye, everybody.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast today. Visit KathyFrey.com for lots more free maternity information and downloads. Plus, you can order copies of Kathy's books, browse through her top recommended motherhood products, and check out her popular support package options. KathyFrey.com.